Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 89 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I got my A-team with Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, guys.
Matthew Aguilar over there.
What's up?
And producer Jim Viscardi is back.
Hey, yo. I've just been doing nothing but humming the Mandalorian theme all morning.
The one you just discovered you liked this year.
That's the end part, not the beginning part. The beginning part's
the Mandalorian theme?
Yeah.
I've never heard someone split the hairs of the Mandalorian theme so finely. And you just came into this, just for our listeners, just context, you just came into liking this theme in season two, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Yes. Okay. All right.
I didn't notice it in the first one.
Just giving proper season context with what we're doing. Producer Jim Viscardi, everybody. So, what are we talking about today on Comic Book Nation? We actually have a lot. I thought this was going to be like a nice, relaxing last double show for the week, but apparently things were happening yesterday on Thursday. So, we got a lot to talk about. First, we're going to get into Warner Brothers making the unprecedented move of dumping all of its big, not dumping, but putting all of its big 2021 movies in theaters and on HBO Max at the same time, and what this means for the movie industry. Then we are going to be getting into the latest chapter of The Mandalorian. Actually, we'll maybe move that to the end because I don't know how many of you are seeing this live and have actually watched the show. So we're going to move that to the end. We'll be talking about Marvel's Hawkeye going into production, then The Mandalorian, and then we have some comics talk to get to because we got to talk about the latest X-Men crossover event, how it ended, and where the franchise is going from here. So let's get started with all of that right up the top. Like I said, Warner Brothers shocked the world yesterday.
This was groundbreaking news.
Yeah. It's rare in our industry that we actually get a heads up of like, hey, there's a storm a-coming. And we were like, hey, can we look up at the sky of Twitter? And it's just like, rumble, rumble, rumble. And then sure enough, like, just a downpour that Warner Brothers is putting all of its big 2021 movies out in theaters and on HBO Max at the same time. This includes The Suicide Squad, The Conjuring 3, Godzilla vs. Kong, the Mortal Kombat reboot, Dune, and a list of others. But those are, of course, the major ones we care about. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of same format as that's going to kick off with Wonder Woman 1984 on Christmas. We'll get a simultaneous premiere in theaters and on HBO Max, but it will only run for 1 month on HBO Max before being taken off the service. And it's all these movies will be free to people who are already subscribers with HBO Max. So no additional cost, none of that Disney Plus extra premium.
Oh my gosh.
$30.
Yeah, $30.
Did they ever open Mulan up to everyone?
No, but it's actually free just today, went today, baby.
It's free today. Yeah. Today.
Hey,
Mulan is free today. So timing. If you've been if you've been waiting for Mulan free, today is your day.
Yay!
All right. And HBO Max has said we learned from this, and
I will finally watch it.
Yeah, you guys remember the show season two back in May when we were all just looking at HBO Max coming out the gate, like, how are you going to mess with this Disney Plus action, buddy?
Oh, yeah.
And now we're ending the year on a very different note. What do you think? Jim Viscardi, you're a producer. You're all over this industry. Look, tell us how you're feeling about this.
This one's going to be an interesting one. And so as of right now, the plan is, like you said, for 2021. That may change midway through 2021. Like if things start to get back to normal and whatever, like I can't imagine they would go back on this brand, big brand proclamation that it's all going to go there, because I think it's a necessary step especially for where we are, and like legitimately, and like we talk about this all the time, this industry is changing literally every day, for better, for worse, for somewhere in between. Studios are going to get to a point where they cannot have an enormous backlog, and there are only so many weekends to open up in a year. There's you're going to start getting movie crowding, and you know, at what point do you just say, oh, you know what, forget it? It's so
right.
I mean, but it's been interesting because like you've been seeing even before this, right? Like studios like Paramount selling Coming to America 2 to Amazon, and you know, a bunch of movies getting sold to the streaming networks. Like this is something that before this was already kind of happening, and
this just expedited it.
This just expedited. But when you look at where we've landed for 2021 and what Warner Brothers release calendar looks like, it's got some big movies in it. It's got Suicide Squad. It's got The Matrix 4, it's got a few other. And then you've got like the next kind of tier down. You've got your Mortal Kombat, which I don't think they were planning on that being a $1 billion franchise, but now that now everyone's going to be able to see it. And here's the great thing. HBO Max has now become HBO has always been this, but for the movie year, the mature audiences streaming platform for movies, right? Because like everything that we've gotten on for Disney Plus really has been PG-13 and below. And so there are, a lot of adults out there, all who want to go see movies, who are going to be able to have that experience at home. And like, so there are a lot of people be like, oh my God, this is going to kill the theater industry. It's definitely going to hurt it. It's not going to help. And so,
I feel like we have no other choice at this point. Well, I mean, if they stop for an entire year, I mean, that will also kill the industry.
Yeah. There's been an argument that's been like, well, the studios are never going to make their money back on this because these are supposed to be, some of these are potential to be $1 billion franchises.
Yeah.
And I can see how someone would think that initially, but the biggest thing that you need to realize is that the money that they would make from these movies expands so far beyond just the box office. It's licensing, it's merchandise, it's a ton of other stuff in addition to obviously getting more of those eyeballs on HBO Max. Like this definitely, HBO Max now has the premier lineup of movies out of any of the streaming platforms for 2021.
Oh yeah, easy.
Like, it's dumb to mention Apple TV Plus, but like that, who cares about that anymore? Amazon has been picking up properties from other studios.
Yeah,
and has been slowly beginning to build that library.
They've been
there.
Sneaking up. Like,
yeah, and Prime is one of those sneakiest, biggest builders right now.
Yeah,
Netflix will always be what it is. I think they're it'll be interesting to see what 2021 looks like. They were able to get through 2020 because they filmed a ton of stuff already.
Right.
But I mean, they've got a number of things that are not necessarily franchise driven kind of stuff that'll come to the platform. But like, for the best bang for your buck for 2021 right now looks like HBO Max and Netflix. Sure, Disney Plus is going to have the Marvel, the MCU shows, and so I would probably put that in third. Because I think the shows are different than how you would consider movies. Like those Marvel fans are going to flock to watch that stuff. It's interesting. It's the joke that everyone makes now where it's just like, I don't know which subscription service to subscribe to, and why can't someone just bundle them all? And I'm like, that was cable and you wanted to get rid of it.
True. Oh my gosh. That's a really good point. I'm personally pumped about this. And I know we've talked about this for a long time already, but I was just curious, like, which movie are you guys most excited about from this HBO?
I'm really excited for Mortal Kombat.
Me too.
That
was my favorite movie as a kid. Yeah, I was awesome. The weirdo kid that was obsessed with Mortal Kombat, and all my friends were like playing with Barbies.
I mean, I'm I don't know if I'm excited for, I'm just excited to see what the experience is collectively of everybody doing this at home. I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out and if there is a way to kind of have the kind of connectivity that people are kind of screaming about losing in theaters, you know, through other means. I mean, we here know better than anybody after this year how you can pull movie communities even closer together, even if you're apart and watching in separate homes, because we did that. And Brandon Davis, you know, he did that with our quarantine watch party. So I'm kind of curious to see. We got to move on in a second, but
we actually have some breaking news, Kofi. I don't mean to throw off the flow of your show, but Oscar Isaac is attached to play Solid Snake in Metal Gear Solid. And it's Sony is picking it up and taking it to the theaters.
What?
Oscar Isaac is just landing.
What is going on?
Oh, my God. This is supposed to be a quiet podcast.
This is phenomenal.
There's not much more news outside of that. So they still don't know when it's going to go into production because Oscar Isaac's schedule is very, very busy right now. He's got Moon Knight.
He's Moon Knight.
He's got Scenes from a Marriage for the HBO show. Dune is coming up. I mean, Dune is done, right? But like, but he's also supposed to be in Ex Machina. Brian K. Vaughan's Ex Machina, which I think got retitled to like The Great Machine or something. So he's got a very busy schedule.
Really trying to figure out how I feel about that.
Solid Snake. Yeah, I mean,
I kind of love it.
That's not a jump I would normally make. Like, that's not a, like, he's a great actor and I'm sure he'll do fine, but that's not like,
he's not my face that I picture.
Right.
That I picture.
Yeah.
Solid Snake's kind of a Clint Eastwood type in a weird way. Like, I don't want Clint Eastwood as Solid Snake, obviously, but you know what I mean.
They could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I mean, Oscar Isaac's choices right now is Mark Spector and Solid Snake are both interesting. And I'm sure he's like, look, I got to do the workouts anyway. Let's just get a mercenary two for one.
Oh my God.
But that's crazy. Thank you.
Oh Breaking my God, news. I want Oscar Isaac in a cardboard box. That's all I want. That's all I want. I just want him to sneak around in a box. And I'll be so happy.
I still have and had for years my ringtone is the from his whatever the hell you want to call it. I love it.
All right, so that's breaking news, and thank you, Jim Viscardi, producing some of that right there. So we'll wrap it up on the movie theater industry. The only thing I was going to say about the WB thing is it's crazy that some of their like producing partners didn't even know about this.
My gosh,
that's no. a thing that happened.
Yeah,
that's
a thing that happened.
They found out on Twitter.
Yeah.
Did anyone comment?
I don't know if everybody's commented.
Lionsgate commented in the fact that they said that they didn't know.
I think Legendary with the other one for like Godzilla versus
Kong. A lot of WTF texts.
Sorry, that's what I meant. I meant Legendary. Whoever.
Yeah. So, a lot of that going on. So we're going to see how that part of this shakes out, because that is another part of this equation. Not telling your producing partners and distribution partners that you're doing this. All right. Because they're not violating anything. It's going to theaters. They just didn't tell them. And that's some that's great business 101 right there. We didn't lie. They're going to theaters.
Oh, wow. In the chat, we got a Nintendo fan says CEO of AMC Entertainment commented on it, and he is not okay with it.
Oh yeah, he.
Oh no, theaters are not okay with it. Yeah, we can just speak for them. No. All right, moving right along. Let's move along from that and our breaking news to talking about Marvel's Hawkeye, the conversation that will make Jim very happy and Matt very angry. I want to get into this. So, out of all the MCU Phase 4 projects, you know, not surprisingly, as usual, Hawkeye was kind of bringing up the rear in terms of excitement for this. But I think that's changed now because we just... Oh, wow. Getting hot and spicy in here today. I love it. All right.
Oh, man.
EGIF. All right, so... We've gotten some big updates about the Hawkeye series, which is going into production. And like any other Marvel project, once it's in production, they can't keep all the secrets from us anymore because people see stuff. So first of all, yes, they have Kate Bishop in this show. Yes, it is Hailee Steinfeld from True Grit, Bumblebee, and you know, all those songs you love. So there's that. But we got a crazy kind of Marvel character casting drop for this show that I don't think anybody really expected. First things first, you know, this says a lot, but we're getting a Black Widow in this show, and it's not Scarlett Johansson. Right. Florence Pugh's Yelena will be appearing in Hawkeye as, you know, Black Widow, which kind of suggests that, again, the Black Widow movie, I mean, is that kind of a spoiler for how this thing kind of ends? Or
kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But at this point,
but I mean, we all kind
whatever.
Of, we knew.
Like, just Florence give us Pugh more content.
Signed on. We said yeah. This isn't going to be a one-off. So, yeah. But yeah, we also got additional characters that are going to be appearing in the show in the casting for them. We are going to get Echo, the deaf Native American character who can copy people's moves and do all that. We're going to get Clown, who is kind of ties to Hawkeye in that series from, what was it, Matt Fraction? I forget who wrote that series.
Matt Fraction and David Ahazaran. Yep.
Yeah. So that, which was one of the more kind of beloved modern Hawkeye takes. And Swordsman, who we were just slamming pretty hard for all fall in Marvel's kind of Empire crossover, is going to get his MCU debut in the Hawkeye series. So, Jim and Matt, how do you guys... Oh, and Vera Farmiga is playing Kate Bishop's mom, and possibly theories are she could be playing somebody else like Madame Mask. How do you guys feel about this? Jim, as the guy who understands Hawkeye is the soul of this MCU, how do you feel about this?
It is very clear that this show is going to take all of its cues starting from that Fraction run and move forward, because the inclusion of Swordsman means, you know, Swordsman had a pretty big role in the Kate Bishop Hawkeye series that came further down the line. Everyone, you know, losing their mind over, you know, shots of Pizza Dog, which is
Pizza
great.
Pizza Dog, that's the most important part.
I think one of the cool things that a lot of eagle-eyed fans pointed out, though, was it looks like Clint Barton is going to have a hearing aid in this show, which I think is very cool, not only from a, you know, a representation standpoint. I mean, I'm not sure how what everyone knows, but like both of my parents are deaf. And so it's just a very cool thing to see. So I imagine, you know, the sign language and deaf culture actually played a pretty big role in that. And it's one of those tidbits about Hawkeye that like we've always known, but it was never kind of shown. So that'll be interesting to see. But honestly, like, I'd imagine this show fits more on the, obviously, you know, the Widow and Captain America and Falcon Winter Soldier side of the MCU timeline fence, that, as opposed to the other lane that seems to be, you know, the Doctor Strange.
And just for context, there are two clear distinct lanes to Phase 4. There's this kind of earthbound rearrangement of crime syndicates and covert ops and all that stuff happening across Black Widow, Falcon Winter Soldier, Shang-Chi, now Hawkeye, and then there's this more kind of cosmic multiverse stuff.
Right, which is why I'm like, rolling my eyes on the... because I really like the cosmic stuff.
Sorry, I would venture to say it's probably three lanes, Kofi, because the strange and WandaVision stuff probably is on its own track, but I can't imagine it overlaps with anything that's going on with Guardians and Thor,
like time travel,
like true cosmic stuff.
Okay,
I think we're like the magic and mysticism.
Oh, but right. you don't know yet, but that's true.
I mean, inevitably, at the end of the day, it's all connected. Right? Hashtag it's all connected, RIP Jeff Loeb.
And we're not, I mean, and just to bring a bow on this, because of Kang, this could really all be connected in the kind of central villain of Kang, the Conqueror.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's it. Then
Kate Bishop's dope. And it's awesome that it's awesome to see Steinfeld like in the role and them together. He lost the buzz cut thing. That weird mohawk / buzz cut weird thing he had in Endgame. He lost.
Well, he's not angry Ronin anymore. He's back to being.
That's the thing. That's the interesting thing, though. Like, we may actually see Echo as Ronin, or like flashbacks, because Echo was awesome. The original Ronin.
Yeah, Echo was the original Ronin. Yeah, no, I was excited to see Bishop. I was excited to see Pizza Dog. I do think. Well, I'm not excited for the Hawkeye side of the series. I'm excited for the like torch to pass. So I can get Bishop and stuff. But I will say, I do love that they're leaning so hard into this run. And also that, like, the hearing aid stuff. Like, there's some really interesting things done in that run that I am excited for them to tackle here. So it's the most high I can be on this series, I am.
From all what right. I'm you, saying. You know what? Today, in 2020, we will take it.
Right, yeah. All right. That's positive. I think I'm being positive.
Seeing a lot of the filming in New York, though, has me a bit, like, nostalgic for and homesick for New York. And so I'm very excited for that.
Yes, that's my everyday, Jim. But here I am with you in Nashville doing this. So, yes, let's move right along now because I can't pay these therapy bills.
You guys should watch Dash and Lily. It's set in New York, and it's a Christmas series on Netflix. It's adorable.
I don't need – stop adding to my
bill. It's so cute.
We're taking a break. We're paying some bills. We're coming back. We're talking The Mandalorian. And then we got some comics to talk about. So stay tuned for all of that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, so we're back. Let's talk Mandalorian this week. If you guys have not seen The Mandalorian, we are going to get into some stuff here. We're going to get into some spoilers because
This
podcast has to kind of live from now for the next couple of days. But I realize that this early hour of Friday, some of you may not have seen it. So give us like a good 7-8 minute span here.
Especially if you're watching on Twitch.
If you're watching on Twitch right now.
Even come back.
Just mute us.
Mute us. Keep those views up. Mute us. But come back in like 7 or 8 minutes.
I'll do two big thumbs up when it's safe to come back.
We don't want to ruin The Mandalorian for you. So please, we do not want to ruin it for anybody. But we're going to talk about the latest episode of The Mandalorian. Spoiler alert. Last one. Here we go. All right, so the latest episode of The Mandalorian is Chapter 14 that flashed open with the ominous title of The Tragedy. And I was
I was so scared.
Yeah, right?
I was watching this at like late night, and I'm like, oh God, I have to watch this like right before bed, and it's called The Tragedy.
Yeah, oh man, you took
I didn't sleep till 2, yeah.
So Mando and Baby Yoda, Grogu, make their way to Tython, that planet Ahsoka sent them to go to this Jedi temple where Grogu can kind of commune with the Force and contact the Jedi. So they get there, but like all things in The Mandalorian, it's never quite just a straight line. So they get to the planet, they get to the temple, and as soon as they get Grogu on this seeing rock, there's two ambushes. One is from Boba Fett, and the other is from Moff Gideon. And when Boba Fett returns, he brings a surprise kind of accomplice with him. And one more spoiler alert for you guys, because we're trying to take care of you. But that person is, of course, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ming-Na Wen, who plays Fennec Shand, the kind of expert assassin who starred in Chapter 5, The Gunslinger. She's still alive. And that kind of explains what that cliffhanger ending of that episode was, if you remember. So Mando leaves the planet and kind of leave. In Fennec, we see her body laying in the dirt, and then we see this figure with spurs kind of approach her body, and everybody was like, it's Boba Fett! And we were all like, shut up. And then it turns out it is Boba Fett. And Boba Fett saved her and has his own kind of, you know, Darth Vader-style cybernetic thing that apparently could treat really bad injuries, which could maybe explain, again, how he got out of the Sarlacc pit and is still with us, even though he's not pretty anymore. But, yeah. So she's back, and they have this epic fight. But, you know, Boba doesn't want to fight Mando. He wants his armor back. And here's the kind of key of this episode. The first key. There's a lot of keys in this episode. But the first one is we get this kind of retcon that they kind of quickly jabble and throw at you for Jango Fett and Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars series, which Jango Fett was a guy who's the best bounty hunter. He was wearing Mandalorian armor, but he supposedly stole it and just wore it. And in Clone Wars, they specifically say when they go to Mandalore, Obi-Wan gets told, that dude's not a Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. Well, this chapter of The Mandalorian says, nope, we're doing away with all that. Jango Fett was a foundling like Din Djarin, who earned his armor fighting in the Mandalorian Civil Wars, which are a whole thing between the clans of Mandalorians. And basically, Boba is trying to kind of cash in on the Mandalorian legacy clause to have his father's armor returned to him because it's rightfully his by the creed of the Mandalorian and all this stuff. So they're not fighting. Boba and Din Djarin actually work this out because Din Djarin's like, all right, it's according to the creed. Here's your, you know, I'll give you your armor. But they get ambushed by Moff Gideon, and this other crazy ambush kind of unfolds, and we get these awesome action scenes, courtesy of Robert Rodriguez, of, you know, Boba Fett and Fennec taking out stormtroopers, Boba Fett getting his armor back, and getting to see what Boba Fett's armor finally looks like on full display with all of its weapons and craziness and all of that, and of course Mando fighting, you know, stormtroopers. It gets crazier. We got the Dark Troopers officially name dropped. They made their debut. We find out what they are in Star Wars canon, and little baby Grogu got taken, which, you know, as a father, that was a little bit harrowing for me. I did not like that part.
So awful.
Yeah, but
I'm sad.
The end of the episode was actually my favorite part, which is Grogu in captivity with Moff Gideon, and they have their kind of first face-off, and we get to see baby Yoda, you know, have his first fight scene, which is as adorable as you would think it is, and awesome. And he uses a couple force chokes on some guys. You know, he's got some dark side in him, Baby Yoda does. So, yeah, that was all really good. And first of all, my main takeaway of this episode is Baby Yoda handcuffs might be the cutest thing I've seen all year. Just like, they better release like a handcuffed Baby Yoda doll, because like,
I just love that like new dad Mando is like the only thing keeping Baby Yoda from the dark side, basically.
Yeah. You don't think it would end up that way. You think his parenting would questionably lead there, but right. It's good. My other takeaway from this episode is Giancarlo Esposito is so awesome that he can act with a puppet and still make like my favorite scenes like of the year.
That was great. God. That's a great scene.
I was thinking to myself, him walking down the hallway is menacing as all hell. And I'm like, oh, this guy is, he's scary.
Very.
Yeah, I love this. But what'd you guys think of the episode? Janelle, let's jump to you.
Oh my gosh, I loved it. Ah, it's actually been my favorite episode of the entire series.
Oh,
I think it's one of the shortest episodes, at least from this season. Yeah,
it was. And yeah, it was about 25 to 29 minutes long.
So. Yeah. And I looked at the time first and I was kind of disappointed because you guys know I like more content and longer episodes. And I just was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I feel like they really blocked out the story perfectly in such a short amount of time. Obviously super disturbed by Baby Yoda, Grogu. P.S. Everyone is pronouncing that name wrong. And every time they do, I have to correct them because I'm going to start saying it wrong. But yes, they're sticking with that name.
Yeah, you're in a safe space here.
You can call Baby Yoda. Okay, Baby Yoda. I like that so much better. Honestly, just so much. You've basically reviewed the whole episode. So I just feel like they did a fabulous job. I feel like the directing was magnificent. I feel like the writing was incredible. It's really hard to get that much story in such a short episode. And I'm enjoying this series so much. So much. Yeah.
Jim, Matt, how do you guys feel about Boba Fett, this version we're getting of Boba Fett? Because he's had several phases. First, he was just Mr. Iconic Nobody from the original trilogy. Then the Clone Wars animated series kind of made a backstory to him as a young kid, which fans were on the fence about. How you guys feeling about old man Boba?
I'm sorry, did you see the knee rockets he had?
That was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that was so cool.
You mean my 2021 wardrobe choice? Yes.
I personally, this is my favorite Boba. I will say that. He's the most interesting to me because, I mean, I love the design. I've always loved the iconic design of the character and just there's a coolness factor about him. But again, like if it's always been that thing of like, you look at the character, he's been in the trilogy, you know, he's in there for like 20 minutes, like total, like Jango is a very small part. Like they're all, it's always never completely fleshed out. It's always just been this really cool design mostly. And here I really dig it. Like this, this is a character I can actually get behind and like. I like also that he fought with, what the heck is, I'm not like the biggest Star Wars aficionado, I will say up front. So I don't know what that weapon he has is that he's like hitting people with, which looks like a lacrosse.
That puppy is new. Yeah, we have not seen that.
Okay, cool. Because yeah. I'm like, I'm sure it's been referenced somewhere, but like that thing was awesome. I mean, he was fighting with like a giant staff that looks like it should be on a lacrosse field. And like, it's amazing. Like, he makes it look that killer. So yeah, I dig it.
Jim, I know you have Boba Fett thoughts.
The Mandalorian just feels like a Star Wars reclamation project, right? Where they're taking these pieces of and time frames of continuity, and for all intents and purposes, like, it feels like fix is the wrong word, but it's
if it's the right word, it's the right word.
Well, but there have been a lot of Star Wars threads, right?
What about refreshes?
I feel like the Mandalorian is holding all of the strings to the, you know, various Star Wars balloons that are floating out there,
yeah,
in a way that is incredibly cool to see. Yes, there are going to be things that new fans don't understand. There are going to be things that, you know, fans of certain aspects of those things are going to love and appreciate. But what I love about it is it makes me feel like I want to go do the research in a way that, like, that,
yes,
comics kinds of, I feel like,
you
does for you.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I have,
interrupt you, but there are actual numbers behind that, and they're significant. Yes, there have, mm-hmm, been significant bumps, for instance, in Clone Wars and Rebels viewing,
good,
on Disney Plus because of, yeah, the Mandalorian episodes having to deal with Bo-Katan and Ahsoka and people wanting to find out. So there is a numerical bump that we can actually point to.
Yeah. So, like I said, and so, like, I think that is definitely the case for Boba Fett. I would definitely, you know, like to learn more. And I think, you know, like, Kofi, you basically, you know, appreciate it. This is all, for all intents and purposes, setting up for the rumored Boba Fett show, the spinoff, yeah, show. And that's what this show seems to be doing, right? Like, it's collecting everything and holding on to it. But then also, like, you know, last week's episode was the setup for the Ahsoka, like an Ahsoka Tano spinoff.
Dude, we potentially before have three
is for Bad Batch.
Shows.
Yeah.
I forgot. We have a possible Bo-Katan Night Owl series, a Bad Batch thing to explain Baby Yoda's kind of getting out of Revenge of the Sith, Ahsoka series looking for Thrawn and wrapping up Rebels and Ezra, and now this Boba Fett series.
So it's just impressive, yeah, though, how it does it. In such a, it does not feel like they are, oh, hey, here's your spinoff episode. It doesn't yeah, feel like that.
Here's your backdoor pilot.
Yeah, it's genuinely like woven, like the thing where, like, at the very end, right, when they're both like, well, we made a deal and, like, we're going to, you know, be with you until the child's safe. I lost my flipping mind because I was like, oh my God, they're a team, right? I was so, yes, excited. I was like, I was so cool. Like, when he goes up, and he sees, like, the Empire ship and, like, all that stuff. It's so well done. And then, yes, you can automatically launch a series if you want. And while the Boba Fett series has been rumored for a while, I have cared not one bit about wanting to watch it. I'm like, it's just not, whatever, that's fine. But now, if it's this one, yes, I will absolutely watch that. So it's
it was so cool to see Slave One, though, flying around.
Oh, that was cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I am,
came into the atmosphere, I lost. I was, like, up here at 3 a.m. and I, like, jumped up in the thing like the Matrix dude. Yes.
Like, like, I am not one for, you know, like, the, cause I feel like this show has really traded on a lot of just, like, Star Wars nostalgia bait kind of thing. And I was starting to get worried that there were no stakes, and this episode basically took all of my opinions of the first half of this season, threw them out the window, because now we have stakes, because it felt like it's just been like Mandalorian shows up, meets a new friend, hey, I need help, okay,
yes,
baby's in danger, yes, oh, okay, right, and that's it, and then the episode ends. Now it feels like there are stakes, and I am in on it.
That's awesome.
We got to move on, but the last note that I'm excited for is Bill Burr's coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end of the episode, Bill Burr. To kind of find Moff Gideon and rescue Baby Yoda, they need Bill Burr. So they're going to get Bill Burr's character.
I mean, who doesn't need Bill Burr?
I know. I was just watching The King of Staten Island. I need more Bill Burr. So, like, yeah. So that's, I'm excited for that and kind of revisiting, because the Gunslinger was from season one, was my favorite episode of the show.
Second favorite, but he was brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah, man, it was good. So that's the Mandalorian. You guys, Jim, give him a thumbs up. Tell him they could come back.
It's safe now, Twitch viewers. If you had us muted, come back.
Come on back, everybody. All right. So
type it.
That's The Mandalorian. We're looking forward to, there's two episodes left in the season, so it's about to go down for real. So these next two episodes are going
to
get real.
Be nice to Baby Yoda. Oh my God, I'm so sad. It makes me so, it breaks my heart.
All right. What breaks your heart? No spoilers. Let's move on. So, comics. We got to talk about this week. There's some big things I do want to talk about. I think next week I want to talk about King in Black a little bit and that whole Venom thing, because that big Marvel event is getting crazy real fast. But we got to do our cleanup. I feel like we'd be robbing fans if we didn't do cleanup on Ten of Swords, the X-Men crossover event, the big one since House of X and that whole relaunch. So we've been kind of on the fence. I think we've been kind of split in this show about how we enjoyed it. By split, I mean Jim was kind of the downer on this, but not in a bad way. I mean, you made fair points. You made fair points about whether it was a bait and switch. I think Matt and I enjoyed it because it played up some of the elements of this new Dawn of X reboot we like, just the kind of characters getting together, doing weird situations, weird character combinations. And it turned out to be an unexpected pleasure because Ten of Swords turned out to be really a fantasy story in a lot of ways about the X-Men going to fantasy land and having to kind of, you know, at the whims of a witch, face this dark other half of these mutant people. But then, man, Ten of Swords Destruction just really, I mean, that was about as comic booky as it gets, right? Like, I mean, that had everything in it. Yeah. And I read that when I was up at like 3 a.m. and I was just like, thought I would just read a couple pages, but every page I was just like, what? Like, what? Oh, okay. Like, okay. And then that was epic. Yeah. The X-Men, basically this tournament goes sideways. Doesn't even matter in the end. They're going to have a full on war with this dark army and it becomes a full, you know, all out war and just gorgeous art for me and just gorgeous battle scenes. And the best thing was, even though there was a lot of silliness and play in this crossover, I feel like there were still the necessary kind of character beats and threads to make this final battle and this epic war actually matter and have me care about it. And it even brought back some of the kind of things we were ragging on in the beginning, like the whole Cable issue with him going to the orbital station and that whole weird thing came finally back into play. So I enjoyed it. And I don't think there was as drastic the changes as they might have teased with some of the setup to this, you know, if you die in Otherworld, you're kind of gone and these new copies coming out and all that. But I think it did a nice job of actually rebooting this House of X concept for the next phase and having me be interested and care about like where it's going next and care about a much wider world of the X-Men now that has like all these Araco mutants and all this stuff in their history. So that was my take. What did you guys think? Jim, I'm kind of interested to see how you thought this crossover stuck the landing.
I enjoyed the ending. I thought it was an incredibly interesting way to write off Apocalypse in a way that like just puts him on the shelf for a little bit and, you know, hopefully we'll see him somewhere down the line. I don't necessarily know. Like, I feel like with these big events, there's usually a pretty good idea of where the X-Men go next. And I don't necessarily know as if we got that here. Like, it feels like, okay, we did the thing and now it's different, but not really. And we kind of just go back to normal and hope for the best, basically. And the other thing that I honestly thought we were going to get here as a way for some payoff is like, I figured Moira would be involved in some form or fashion and she wasn't. And so like, that's still like a big major thread that's just kind of hanging out there that I hope has not necessarily been forgotten about. But it was okay. You know,
do you really think Hickman forgot about that though? I don't think so.
I mean, sure. Yeah. But like,
but would that have made this better? I don't think Moira would have made this better.
I don't know. But for me, I don't think the ending set anything up for me to be excited about. That's the biggest thing for me.
You know what's crazy? I'm going to agree with Jim.
You bastard.
I'm split. Okay, so I'm kind of split because I really enjoyed this issue. It is very, as Kofi said, it's very comic booky. There's a lot of big action. Look, when Scott and Jean come in and like that full group of X-Men comes in and like as the reinforcements, I'm not going to lie. Like, I marked out huge. I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome. The kid got their son. Like, there's an awesome Cyclops moment and, like, dialogue of just, like, it's so good. Like, there's so much of that, like, just killer X-Men, like, we're going to go do the job because that's what we do stuff in here. Oh, love that, right? So we get to the battle part, and, like, there's some interesting stuff there. But then, like, the second half of the book is just, like, hey, your team's not good enough. We need more reinforcements. So here's another group, and here's another group. And then finally, that thing that I still can't stand. I still don't like that one issue. I know Jamie loved it. I can't take that issue of X-Men where it was literally shoehorned in here just so that they could have the, like, the deus ex machina, essentially, of, like, hey, we can call upon this army that we've developed in no way, shape, or form. We're just going to call upon them, and they're going to save the day. Because it's not the other two that save the day. It's them. It's just, like, the overwhelming. So I thought that was kind of a cop-out because I didn't feel like we earned that. I felt like that we shoehorned it way back here. I'm not saying it wasn't there, but I'm just saying it didn't feel earned. It felt just like, oh, yeah, okay. And then it was done. And so that part was – that left me, like, the ending kind of left me a little lukewarm. I loved the getting there. I didn't love how we left things. And, like, the Apocalypse stuff is cool. That's really interesting. I love that he stayed back. And then, like, that reunion with the Horsemen and things, like, that's interesting. But I kind of agree with Jim as far as, like, there's not that hook for the next, you know, for, like, what is it? Is it Reign of X that's next?
Yes.
Is that what the next thing is? So, like, there's not that thing that's just like, oh, yeah, that's what we're going to build around. I'm not saying that they're not going to put in some interesting things. And honestly, I think some of the books are strong enough on their own that they'll develop their own hooks individually, and then they'll build to another thing like this. But it's just the ending part left me a little lukewarm. I wasn't as thrilled with it because I thought it just kind of, it was very tied up in a bow, and there wasn't a lot of ramifications going forward that I'm excited about.
I think I disagree only in the sense that there are a lot of subtle things that happened in this. I think there's kind of a trick they play. A lot of this action takes place in Otherworld, and there's a lot of focus on that. But there are a lot of ramifications for the X-Men and Krakoa after this. The Irako connection's still there. It's not going away. The Council and the X-Men and Krakoa, the balance of power has shifted greatly because the Quiet Council has kind of sacrificed Jean and Scott and other people that kind of balanced it out. Now the evil mutants kind of have more of a hold. Sinister has all that DNA that he's kind of holding on to. There are a lot of things in the works. You know, the whole thing with the Captain Britain corpse are back, and whatever is happening with Betsy right now and all of that. So,
but I agree that those are there, yeah. But those aren't event building things.
Oh,
there are things Marauders will explore the Council, right? And that's really exciting. Otherworld, like,
no, this is set up for the next run of issues.
Yes, but I don't see the, like, that central thing that's like, hey, here's where we're planting our flag for, like, the next chapter of X-Men.
Oh, no, I don't think
stories.
That's there yet. Yeah,
I think it's just individual, hey, we're planting the seed for this series, which is fine. And I think some of them will do great things with it, and others will kind of fall flat. But I just didn't see that big next thing of, like, well, here's what we're building that next huge chapter of the X-Men universe around. But
I don't think, but by the same token, I think it's fair to say that I don't think any of us saw Ten of Swords coming when we got to the end.
True.
Of House of
at
X.
All. Not at all.
But so I'm not there. I also, just to kind of close out this, because we got to end the show, but I did judge how I felt on the next kind of post-event issue, which was Hellions, that I picked up and read. And I think, at least in that book, and this could be by book, I think Marauders will do well. Hellions, X-Men, I'm really on the fence about how that's going. But Hellions did a good job of just kind of segueing away from this event and back into its own thing, with everybody kind of just trying to figure out how they got killed in Otherworld, what happened, Sinister playing them all, and then having to go on this next mission. And there are exciting things happening, because that book ends with a major X-Men villain return, and I was like, oh, I'm, like, excited about this now. So,
Janelle, what did you think? Because I'm curious.
Very hard to jump into, like, a last issue.
Yeah, we threw you in. We threw Janelle into the just this last issue of this crossover of the X-Men reboot.
However, because I had no context, I feel like I'm least familiar with X-Men and, you know, the backstory and everyone's roles. I was a little confused at first who was the bad guys and who was the good guys. And that's pretty crazy. You know, I don't recommend anyone just jumping in. But I will say that the positive things are I loved the art. I loved the story progression without even using words. That's something that lately I haven't been seeing a lot of in my comic book reading. So I really, really enjoyed being able to like experience, I feel like a real comic book experience, like watching huge battles and like beautiful art. And I love seeing all of that. I feel like I haven't really experienced a lot of that. Obviously I've been reading Three Jokers and things like that. So I very much appreciated, I liked what they were doing. I feel that obviously a lot of things were lost on me, but I'm intrigued. And I also love like the world. I'm guessing, is it like interdimensional, cosmic? I don't really understand exactly what world we're in, but I like the weird stuff. So
yeah,
I'm into it. You know, I love that stuff. So I'm definitely going to probably sink my teeth into this and just kind of read the whole thing at my own time. And
well, that's what I was actually going to ask. So after reading this, because I know Kofi brought up, you know, House of X.
Yes.
And that's really what set the stage for all of this to follow. Okay. So does reading this intrigue you and interest you to go back to that?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And you sent me something really helpful for if there are any other noobs in the chat or hanging out. There's like a guide, there's a handbook, and I feel like that's going to be extremely helpful. So that's on Comixology, and I think it's going to be very helpful.
All right.
Reference point.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. That'll wrap it up for this show. We got to get out of here, but we want to thank you guys for listening to Comic Book Nation. As always, if you're just getting into the show, we will be putting up new episodes weekly on comicbook.com. We will also put up episodes live on Twitch and also broadcast on Facebook and the Comic Book Nation YouTube page. If you want to interact with us in the show, you can always follow the Comic Book Nation Twitter account or check in at the Comic Book Nation hashtag. If you want to hit us up individually, you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Meg.
The twinkle you just hear when you hear my name.
Merry Christmas.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler on Twitch and all of the socials.
And I'm at Jim Viscardi.
All right, that'll do it for this show. If you like it, we are on a bunch of podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio. You can tell your smart home devices to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast, and it'll start playing for you. If you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review, because we got a merch closet full of shirts we got to get rid of to our 5-star reviewers. Otherwise, we want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, this is Comic Book Nation, and we'll see you next time. Peace.
Bye, guys.
See ya.